I'm E.G. Marshall. A mystery is something of which we know that it is, but we do not know how it is, what it is, or how it came to be. This intrigued Charles Dickens and Charles Collins, his son-in-law, who were fascinated by a true story of a man accused of murder. And they set it down for us to tell you today. Whether it's a tale of the supernatural or the unnatural, I shall leave to you.
That man!
Who?
The man who has just come into the witness box.
You have some objection to our selecting him as one of your jurors?
At all hazards, challenge him.
But why?
Don't ask! Challenge him, I say! My life may depend on it!
Our mystery drama, Trial for Murder, was originally written by Charles Dickens and Charles Collins and adapted especially for Mystery Theater by James Agate, Jr., and stars Paul Hecht.
It is sponsored in part by Sinoff, the Sinus Medicines, and Exlax. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
The 1978 Buicks. Cars designed to make a whole lot of sense.
A little science.
But along with all the innovation and logic, there's all the comfort and luxury you've always loved about Buicks.
A little magic.
From the Skyhawk and the amazing new Century and Regal.
A little science.
Right up through the trim, lithe, full-size Buicks.
A little magic.
The new Buicks. What you want and what you need.
A little science. A little magic.
You simply must see the marvelous carpets reduced for Sandler and Worth's Veterans Day sale. I'm Peggy Fitzgerald. The sale's going on now. I've seen many, many sales, but Lou Sandler really outdid himself for Veterans Day. The values are amazing. And what makes it so extra special is that the gorgeous Karastan carpets are on sale. There was a time when Karastan never went on sale. Never, never. But things have changed. Now Karastan's Toujours is only $15.95 a square yard, installed with pad. That's a $4 a yard saving. And Toujours is a lovely, dense plush and DuPont Antron, and actually hides soil and stands up to anything. And I know because we have Antron carpet at our log cabin in Kent, and it's just wonderful. Now, do go to Sandler & Worth in Springfield on Route 4 in Paramus, in North Brunswick, in Sukasana, in Nanuet, New York, or any other of their fine stores. You'll be very glad you did. And remember also, the Karastan Oriental design rugs are on sale, too, at 30% off.
A note before we proceed. This is the only mystery story of its kind ever written by that extraordinary author Charles Dickens. Literary history has it he wrote it with his son-in-law, Charles Collins, for a Christmas magazine over 100 years ago. It is a tale that has never been explained and that has become a classic of mystery. Let the principal character, a writer called Charles, tell it.
I suppose you might say it all began with that rope, a gift to me from an admirer. It was the rope from which Dick Turpin, the famous highwayman, was hanged until he was dead. I had it in my hand that evening and was turning it over, thinking of the life it had snuffed out, wondering if it would inspire me to begin work on the new novel. I slept badly that night, and when I awoke, I was horrified to find I had knotted the rope tightly in my hands as if I had, during the night, strangled someone.
Derek, will you see who's at the door? Oh, where is that man? Derek, there's someone at the front door.
Oh, blast, I'll have to get it myself.
Well, good morning, Charles.
Good morning, William. What time is it?
It's just 10. Well, you don't look too well.
William, I detest to hear how badly I look in the morning, especially from an old friend like you.
Oh, well, forgive me. Well, our plan was well taken.
Which plan?
I have just come from Everett and Sons, and they are delighted with our idea for the mystery novel. Especially our working together.
They liked that short outline?
Well, this morning's newspaper made our idea incredibly topical. Have you seen it?
You mean our idea of the murder victim having his throat slit by a razor? What? That really happened?
Ear to ear.
Oh,
When I showed the headline to Arthur Everett, he was astounded that fact and fiction could come that close. Here, have a look, Charles. Read it.
Yes, yes. I will. And I am pleased that Everett wishes us to begin writing, but if you don't mind, not today.
Oh, perfectly understandable. Suppose I stop by tomorrow at the same time. Oh, keep the newspaper. You'll be quite amazed at how close our inventiveness and the truth happen to be.
I read the news story of the murder twice, three times. The deceased had been discovered in a bedroom lying halfway between the end of the bed and the bathroom. Like the character in our proposed mystery novel, he had money, an inheritance, didn't work for a living, and lived alone. A razor or a very sharp knife had taken his life. Accident while shaving? Suicide? Not likely, according to the police, for no weapon had been found. Scotland Yard had been called in, and they said it was...
murder.
No doubt whatsoever.
Inspector, I've been asked to lend whatever assistance you need.
Oh, yes, they told me you'd be here.
Harker, Metropolitan Police. I found the body.
Harker, I'd like you to make inquiries as to the friends, acquaintances, etc., of the deceased. Does he have a place of work? What tradesmen does he deal with? Does he have a bank account and so forth?
Well, it should be done, Inspector.
And then report back to me at the yard. I'll lay odds, Harker. This is a simple, open and shut case of robbery.
What makes you say that, sir?
The experience of years. Either the victim or the murderer knew one another, or they did not. If they knew one another, there could be many motives. Jealousy, imagined wrong, actual wrong, revenge, that kind of thing. It's that area I'm asking you to explore.
Right, sir.
On the other hand, had they known one another, why would the apartment of the victim be in such disarray? Is it likely that after slitting the throat of the deceased, that the murderer would take the time to ransack the place, knowing that at any moment he might be discovered?
Oh, yes, yes. You have a point there, sir.
Oh, no. Much more likely is it that the perpetrator was intent upon robbery. His victim entered unexpectedly. The murderer took a razor, killed, and left.
And the suicide theory?
The kind of nonsense the press would print. What month is this, Harker?
November, sir.
Exactly. The victim was wearing an overcoat. I'd say he'd just returned from outside. One does not shave in an overcoat.
Yes.
One does not entertain friends in an overcoat. So be good enough to get me whatever information you can, Harker, so that we can narrow down one aspect of the case. For my part, there are several clues worth following, and I shall be on the trail of that scent.
Do you feel like working today, Charles?
In a moment, William.
Will you come away from that window?
William, there's something out there. Come here. Quickly, come to the window.
Well, what is it, Arthur?
Well, do you see those two men on the opposite side of Piccadilly going from west to east?
Where? What two men?
William, there. One man just passing the lamppost. And about 15 feet behind him, another man. Following him, see? Look, the man in front is looking back over his shoulder. He knows he's being followed.
But there's such a crowd. I don't see your two men, Charles.
William, the man behind, the second man, has raised his right hand menacingly. Look.
Yes, I see him now. The one with the... He's got a very white face, hasn't he? Oh,
thank heaven you see him. I thought I was having delusions. Now, do you see the man he's following?
Well, I'll tell you what strikes me peculiar, Charles. Nobody in Piccadilly is paying the slightest attention to those two. It's as if nobody sees them. The man in front crosses in front of the people around them. He started to run now.
Yes, and the other one right after. There they go, around the corner. Something so mysterious about those men.
Oh, yes, mysterious. That's the word. Oh, I'll never forget their faces. I can tell you that.
Yes, especially the second man.
You know the phrase that comes to my mind? You know what the phrase is? The walking death.
Yes. His face was more transparent than white. Like a face of impure wax.
Oh, whew. What a strange feeling has come over me, like a chill.
Yes, I think a breath of air is what we need now.
Oh, yes, I'll second that. Those two men down there have knocked the stuffing out of me. I can't imagine why.
What did you call the second man? The one who was chasing the first?
You mean the way he looked?
Yeah, I remember. The walking death.
The next day passed smoothly. William and I started our book, each doing half a dozen pages, then exchanging what we had written. Thursday and Friday also went well. The book was gathering momentum. Saturday, William generally spends the morning with his son in Hyde Park. He didn't come to the house until 3 o'clock. I had slept late and badly.
It must be your diet, Charles. You're eating the wrong food.
I saw the room where the murder was committed last night, William.
You did what?
I saw the room, every detail of which is imprinted indelibly on my mind.
You mean the murder case of the man whose throat was cut with a razor?
Yes, yes. The bed, the chest of drawers, the door to the bathroom, the carpet, all very, very clearly. I can even tell you the colors.
You mean you dreamt all this?
Yes.
Look, old man, there's been a fair bit of reporting in the newspapers.
William, since that first day when you showed me the headlines, I've purposely not read one word about the case.
But our novel, you can't discount that. It takes off from the same premise, almost the same victim. Your subconscious took over, so you dreamt.
I can't explain it. It was more than a dream. The colors of everything were so vivid.
Well, was the body of the victim lying there?
Oh, thank heavens, no. The room was empty, but there was blood, red blood.
And you're sure it was that bedroom?
As if I'd been actually transported to the spot.
Oh, well, you are in a state. No, I don't think we'll get much writing done this afternoon.
You're not going to leave, are you?
Oh, no, of course not. I don't like to see you so disturbed. Oh, I almost forgot. I received a summons last night to serve in a jury at a forthcoming session of the Central Criminal Court.
Oh, have you done jury duty before?
No, I haven't. I suppose I could get off, because I don't like the idea of interrupting our work now that we've gotten off to such a good start. Well, on the other hand, Charles, to be right on the spot during some trial or other might be a very good way to get first-hand impression.
First-hand of what?
Oh, of how the wheels of justice grind away. Oh, what's this?
What's what?
Well, don't you open your letters, old chap?
Oh, well, frankly, I was so disturbed that when my man brought up my lunch tray, I didn't touch the food and then I didn't look at them.
Well, this envelope has a familiar look to it.
Huh?
Here, open it.
Yes, well, this is incredible. It's also a request to appear for jury duty at the Central Criminal Court.
Talk about coincidence. But you and I live 2 miles apart at quite different addresses. Yet, within days, both of us receive a summons for jury duty.
Yes, I know, but
wait, I haven't finished. The very time you and I are starting on a crime novel which ends in a trial at a criminal court. Well, I'd call that a coincidence.
According to the poet Schiller, there is no such thing. It's all preordained. He says what seems to us the merest accident springs from the deepest source of destiny.
Well, if accepting this demand to serve on a jury is going to make you unhappy, you're right. Don't do it. But I'd like to be there purely as a matter of research.
That's out of the question, William. Not now. You may go, of course.
Charles, you seem to fear something, and I don't know what it is.
Oh, no, it's not fear.
Oh. It's just an accident of fate. We're both called to serve at the same time. Why make so much of it?
Well, call it a presentiment. A feeling I have. Good Lord. Good Lord, William. Look. Look behind you. We were in my study. The door to my bedroom opened, and a man looked in. Very earnestly and mysteriously, he beckoned to me. I recognized the man immediately. He was the second man of the two we had seen from my window, walking along Piccadilly. The man with the upraised arm. The man with the face of wax.
What is it, Charles? Oh, your bedroom door is closing. That's all I see. It's probably a draft catching.
Stay here, William. I'm going in there. We'll see.
Well?
I thought, William, I thought I saw him. No. It's true. I did see him.
Steady now.
Don't you believe me?
Charles, I... Oh, no. Oh, I know exactly what you saw. It was that dead man. The murdered man.
Why did he come here? Why?
In the language of the supernatural, a word meaning not against nature, but above it, unexplainable happenings are conveyed to the rest of us by people called mediums. They have the ability to stand between two worlds, our world as we know it, and the world of the unknown. So it is entirely possible that our two writers, Charles and William, by the very sensitivity of their talent, are both mediums. What they see and how they will deal with it, we shall learn in greater detail when I return with Act Two.
How does your laxative work? Many brand name laxatives contain ingredients that expand in your stomach. That's how they work. We know a medicine that works differently. It's in the X-Lax pill. Overnight, the X-Lax pill gently stimulates your system's own regular rhythm, stimulates your system for relief in the morning. No surprises, just relief in the morning. That's the X-Lax pill. Try it tonight with confidence. For occasional use only as directed, X-Lax pills.
I want that sinus medicine.
Headache tablet?
No, it relieves headache and congestion, internal sinus pressure, and post-nasal drip. And it has added strength.
You mean added strength sign-off?
Exactly.
Added strength sign-off tablets give you pure aspirin plus 50% more sinus drainer.
To help sinus pain while you drain.
Right, and more sinus drier for post-nasal drip.
Added strength sign-off.
The sinus medicine in the bright red box. Take when needed, only as directed.
S-I-N-D-O-F-F. Sign-off.
Just when you need a good-looking suit, Sears appears with the Executive Vested Suit and a $35 savings. Regularly $125, it's on sale now for $89.99. The Daikon polyester and worsted wool fabric, the handsome solids and patterns, and the $89.99 price make it a very smart choice. Whenever you're looking for a great fashion buy, Sears appears on sale through October 29th. Available in larger Sears men's stores.
Once again, in the interest of fairness, Hillman Cohan Vision Center gives equal time to one of our critics.
Regarding your great eyeglass guarantee, I quote, any lens that is broken will be replaced free of charge. Any other part, including frame, that is broken or damaged will be repaired or replaced free of charge. That's all very straightforward. It goes on. There is no limit to the number of repairs and replacements under this certificate during the one-year period. No questions there either. Well, that's the problem. Where's all that beautiful, mind-boggling legal language that sends people rushing to lawyers like me? You know, like we, the guarantor, and you, the guarantee. Where's the fine print? Oh, have a heart. A little ipso facto never hurt anyone.
Put on a happy face at your vision center.
Get the eyeglass guarantee at Hillman Cohan Vision Center in Jericho at 328 North Broadway. Open daily 10 to 9, Saturday till 5. Visa and MasterCharge accepted.
A word about Charles Dickens before we continue. It's a mistake to think of him only as the benign reporter of the social evils of his England. Not only Ghosts of Christmas Eve came from his pen, but time and again, he'll bring us a haunted man. A man of guilty conscience. A man battling evil. A man under a curse. Now, our tale moves forward, and so do the investigators at Scotland Yard.
We have our man. And as I told you, Harker, robbery was the motive. One doesn't approach ransacked rooms, drawers open, contents thrown about, and expect it to be anything else.
What is the main evidence, Inspector?
What do you suppose?
Various articles of the victims, which he had acquired.
Matter of fact, no. One article only, which he claims to have found in the hall. The murder weapon.
Oh, the knife? The razor?
The razor. Found it in the perpetrator's bathroom. He claims, of course, it's his own.
It's been tested.
Traces of either blood or fingerprints. Everything washed clean, but two facts make his guilt certain. One, he had two razors, one with a metal handle, and the other, which he claimed also was his, with an ivory handle. However it happens, the razor with the ivory handle matches exactly other shaving implements in the victim's bath. Ivory shaving mug, brush, and comb. We have him, all right.
You said two facts, Inspector.
The man we've arrested lived upstairs.
In the same house?
In the same house.
You'll forgive me for saying so, Inspector, but I don't think I'd call this quite an open and shut case.
Well, perhaps so, Harker. It may still be somewhat open, but we shall see what develops at the trial to shut it.
The morning I was due to make an appearance at the Central Criminal Court, I awoke with a sensation of ominous dread. I was still uncertain whether I would volunteer myself for the jury or not. I couldn't get the incredible picture of the man in my bedroom beckoning me out of my mind. What did it mean? As I got out of bed, I reached underneath, and there, curled about my slippers, was the hanging rope. The rope that had put an end to the life of Dick Turpin, the highwayman. I pulled back my hand as if it had been a rattlesnake.
Now, hello, Charles. So you decided to meet me here outside of Old Bailey after all?
Oh, this fog is miserable, isn't it?
Yes, it really is. Now, won't you tell me what prompted you to accept the invitation to sit on the jury?
The reason, I'll tell you why I'm here. We're writing a crime novel about a murder which has recently happened in real life. So a few days in court can only help.
Good. What I've been saying all along. thank goodness. There goes the signal for us to enter. This London fog is too horrible.
Gentlemen, you are here for jury selection?
Yes, we are.
Right, follow me.
Glad to, sir, yes.
Pretty bad out there this morning, isn't it?
Yes, can hardly see your hand in front of your face. It's better. At least the fog cannot follow us into the lower courts. Well, what do we do now?
Will you gentlemen kindly be seated upon the bench against the wall? When your name is called, you'll step forward and be assigned to one of today's trials.
We don't seem to be the only ones called for these sessions. I wonder what cases are being heard.
I brought along a notebook to jot down my impressions firsthand. And I must say, one would have hoped that English jurisprudence could be carried out in a cleaner, healthier atmosphere.
Silence, please. I will ask all prospective jurors to refrain from talking. You, sir, the gentleman in the notebook, no writing, no reading, I beg you. Your complete silent attention while awaiting the pleasure of the court.
An hour passed. William and I and the other gentlemen called for jury duty sat like mute tailor's dummies on the bench. William was called, given a direction, and he disappeared down a hallway. Presently, I was assigned a courtroom. And when I entered, imagine my great surprise to find myself called to the very case that had haunted my dreams and my waking hours. The man murdered with a razor.
Charles, you here too?
Yes, I pray I shan't be selected for this jury.
But why not? For our book, this very case would be invaluable.
I have a terrible premonition about it, that's all.
Look, they've put a man to the bar.
Yes, I know, the murderer.
Well, how do you know?
I recognize him. Well, don't you?
Good Lord, I do. It's the first man we saw going down Piccadilly, followed by the other with the waxen face. Is this man the murderer?
The accused will please stand before the bar, and as each juror is called, his attorney will signal yea or nay, approval or disapproval of that juror, until the selection of the 12 jurors has been accomplished. Bailiff, you may begin to call the names.
William was called and accepted. When my name was given, I stepped into the box. The prisoner, who had been looking at each prospective juror with no sign of concern, suddenly became violently agitated and signaled his attorney.
That man!
Who?
That man, Charles, somebody who's just come into the witness box.
You have some objection to our selecting him?
At all hazards, challenge him.
But why?
Don't ask!
Do you know him?
Challenge him, I say. My life may depend on it.
Nonsense. I've investigated his background. He's exactly the kind of man who will listen with understanding to our defense.
No, I say no.
But if you wish me to conduct your defense, you must be guided by my opinion. This man is a writer, broad-minded, imaginative, and in my opinion, the most sympathetic juror from your point of view.
The prisoner will stand before the bar. The accused has been charged with murder by willfully and maliciously giving the deceased with a razor knife one mortal wound on the throat on the 4th of November, of which wound he instantly died.
I was in court the day the charge was read, for not only was I selected for that jury, but I was chosen foreman. William, as it happened, was seated beside me. On the second morning of the trial, after evidence had been taken for 2 hours, I turned to him.
You must not be swayed by...
I've been counting the members of the jury.
Yes, I saw you.
Several times, slowly and carefully.
You should so Charles, whatever is the matter with you?
One too many, that's what's the matter. I make it one too many. I've counted 13.
No, Charles, I don't know what to make of you.
Will you oblige me, please, William, by counting us?
And doubt. Cast upon veracity and conclusions.
Yes. Why, we are 13.
There must be no...
No, it's not possible.
Missing.
No, we're 12. Are you sure? But I'm quite sure.
Strong, inevitable strange. Chain of evidence.
When first you look about, it does seem like 13 jurors. Yet, such evidence when I count off one by one, hang I can only find 12.
As in all murder trials, the jury was sequestered. We were housed at the London Tavern, and Ayrton slept in one large room under the eye of an officer of the law. His name was Mr. Harker. His bed was drawn against the door. And on the second night, after the lights had been put out, seeing he was still awake and sitting on the edge of his bed, I went to him.
Not sleepy, eh, sir?
Well, it's my first experience at a murder trial, Mr. Harker. I am a bit unnerved.
I've worked on...